News Talk on demand. Interruption-free audio. Where you want it, when you want it.
We have got an absolutely beautiful Sunday on the go. I am Brittany Cafe here with Rick Van Dyvendyke. If you've got a question about anything garden, houseplant, yard related, you can give us a call. Our number is 1-877-332-8255. You can also text us at that same number. Good morning, Rick.
Good morning, Brittany.
Oh my gosh, these plus temperatures are bringing me so much joy. It's going to be a really nice change considering how cold we were like just 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, no, it's when you go from these extreme temperatures from minus and plus, we love it.
but
our plants, especially our junipers and our spruce trees and those kind of things, they don't necessarily love these type of Chinooks because we're seeing around the province, we're seeing anywhere from, you know, plus five down to Regina areas, plus seven almost, which we've seen in the past when we get temperatures like that, is that we see our junipers and we see our little spruce trees and those kind of things. They don't like that kind of temperature. Chinooks are bad for them because if they're plants that are sticking out of the snow, you'll see them turning brown or turning purple as we get into March. So that's when they start dehydrating is when they get weather like this. Now, Brittany, one thing we don't like seeing this time of the year is rain, but actually for those plants, that's a good thing.
Okay.
Because they actually will take moisture in through their needles. Okay. So you can do even things if it doesn't rain in your area, if it's above temperature that much, you can even actually spray water onto your needles and they will take moisture in. But the best thing you can do is if you know you have a salt exposure against the house, can you think of Brittany up against the house, if it's plus five to plus seven, right up against the south side of your house, especially if your house is white or something like that, any color, that light color, it's going to be like more like plus 12, plus 15 up against the house.
Yep.
Especially if there's a reflection off any glass or anything like that where the temperature will just be extreme. And so then all of a sudden at nighttime you go down to, you know, again, minus temperatures at night. So you get those extreme temperatures in those type of plants. It's just too hard on them. It dehydrates them. And so the best thing you can do then is just put some shade in front of them. Put something over top of them, like a piece of snow fence or a piece of burlap or anything that will shade the sun and change the color. I know I get a lot of farmers that have with the wind blowing around like it has in the past bunch of years, he had little spruce trees that may have exposed them. The big trees can kind of take it, but the tiny trees, they might have the tips sticking out of the water. Out of the snow, you might be able to, you know, even shade them somehow, even throw snow over top of them if you can.
I was going to ask that, like if a snow pack almost would be something that is good to do, or should we avoid that?
Yeah. No, it's good.
Okay.
It's good. And what you can even do if you have some wood ash, and we've done that in the fields a lot of times, we've taken wood ash and we actually sprinkle it on top of the snow. And it gets a little black flux into the snow.
Okay.
That's enough to stop the reflection off the snow and stop the temperature from dehydrating the plants. So you can do anything you can just to sort of protect them. And, you know, like if you have cedars or junipers, you can also wrap burlap around them. If you have anything like a Alberta spruce, which we think is really hardy in Saskatchewan, if it's sticking out of the snow, you have to wrap with burlap. Otherwise, they're gonna be all brown by spring with this kind of temperatures happening right now.
Yeah, you're almost like protecting them from a sunburn in a way.
That's exactly what you're doing. Is you're protecting from a dehydration from the sun, from just your the heat. And then also the temperature changes at nighttime that you just want to protect them and they'll be fine as long as you protect them. Cause we're not talking about a lot of days where we're going to be above zero, but it's these Chinooks, these constant changes. And we're probably going to see that again in March as well.
Yeah.
So, and that's what happens is when the ground is still frozen, the roots are still frozen. So the tops are telling, you know, cause they don't lose the leaves like a tree and an evergreen still keeps its needles. So what happens is that you get that kind of temperatures. And the needles are calling for, they're transpiring, and so they're calling for moisture, but the roots are frozen, so they can't give it.
Yep.
And so that's why we just have to protect them, and so they won't transpire. Another one is above temperatures like that, Brittany. You can also get a product called a FoliGuard or Wiltproof, it's also called. It's basically a wax substance. It comes in a little spray bottle, and you can spray it, and what it does is it seals the pores. And then it keeps the plant from transpiring. And then that also works really well, too.
So it's just like suntan lotion, really.
It's all about
sunburns with this.
Exactly.
All right. Now, just for my own curiosity, when we're going, because lately we've been going like from mild to really cold, back to mild, back to really cold. Do those fluctuations cause any issues for the plants, or is it more just the warm temperatures that we need to be looking out for?
Well, warm temperatures, but let's say you have a plant that will tend to, especially up against the house again, if it's going to go up to plus 10 or whatever, some of these plants, their buds can actually swell, right?
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, if we go to a sink to minus 20 again, that can damage a lot of those buds. Especially what happens in temperatures like that is that we'll see if it gets huge fluctuations, we might get, you know, damage to fruit trees because it'll swell their buds, and that's where the buds is where their first flowers come out, right?
Yeah.
And so we can't get damaged that way. So I don't like to see really high temperatures, you know, for a day or two, it's not too bad. But if we see any length of time when it has temperatures above zero, especially when you're starting getting close to, you know, five or plus, this time of the year is just not great for the plants. We love it.
Yeah.
Obviously, 'cause we've been in minus 20 to 40, 40 to 50, minus 50 windshield factors for almost 4 weeks, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we love this kind of temperatures, but we just have to watch our plants. And the snow starts melting, is it when those kind of temperatures will start melting away from the house. The best way you can protect them is just throw some snow over top of them.
Yeah.
Because there's lots of snow in the yard this year. Normally we don't have a lot of snow in the yard. And so you can just keep those plants covered up because it's only up against the house. The rest of the yard will be fine. You don't get those temperature fluctuations away from the house. It's up the plants that are up against the house. So if you do get some exposure of plants, just keep that snow over top of them and they'll be fine.
Perfect. Sounds good. All right. If you've got a question, give us a call, 1-877-332-8255. Right now we have Lorraine in Saskatoon on the line. Good morning, Lorraine.
Good morning. I just have a quick question for Rick. I know you're going to be talking about seedlings before long, so I'll get you there in a hurry. I am wondering how many hours I should have my grow light on. It's on a timer, so I have it for 12 right now. I just wonder if I should do it longer.
12 to 14 hours. 12
okay.
to 14 hours is good. Anywhere in that space is perfect.
Okay,
that gives us enough time for the plants to build to be able to not stretch, and because that's the biggest thing we don't want to do is just really start stretching this time. You want to keep them nice and sturdy and tight.
Sure.
So 12 to 14 hours.
I've got the light down as low as it'll go, just so it's kissing the tops of them. So.
Yeah, especially little seedlings. You probably want them anywhere from 4 to 6 inches above the plant. Okay.
Right. Okay.
And then you can move them up as the plant starts growing up.
Sure.
Okay.
All right, thank you.
Perfect.
You're welcome.
Thanks so much, Lorraine. All right, we are going to take a quick break, and then we'll be right back. We've got some texts coming in to the text line, 1-877-332-8255. Give us a call, send us a text, and we'll answer your question on the air. I'm Brittany Caffey here with Rick Van Dyvendyke, and you're listening to Garden Talk on 650 CKOM and 980 CJME. We've got an absolutely beautiful Saskatchewan day on the go, and that warm weather is going to really continue for the rest of the week. It's going to be a real treat for us, not so much for our plants. I'm Brittany Caffey here with Rick Van Dyvendyke. If you've got a question, give us a call, send us a text, 1-877-332-8255. Rick, we just got a text in from Ray in Saskatoon. He's just wondering, should he get out right now and cover up his cedars?
Yeah, actually, it's any time now. When we start getting toward March, March tends to be the month that we do get the cedars nut turning brown.
Yeah.
Everybody thinks it's the cold weather,
yeah.
Right? And that's why we got to put a coat around them, you know. But I always say it's not a coat we want to try to put around the plants; it's just shade. And so, and March is typically when the temperatures start. You know, the sunlight. Obviously, we see every day. We see the daylight hours getting longer, right?
Yep.
And so the sun starts to get higher up in the sky, and we see that that's where the effect of these temperature changes, and we see that lots in March, especially, and in the first week or so in April when the ground is still frozen, like I was talking about earlier. So, yeah, this is the time of the year, because just not this week you're going to have trouble. You're going to start having trouble with, if you do have problems with your cedars and junipers browning and your little spruce trees, you always see it. Everybody wonders, why do I see them browning in May and June? Well, that's because they were dehydrated and the damage was already done to the cells in the plants already in March, and when we do have Chinooks like this.
Yeah.
So that's why, yeah, you whenever you start getting warmer temperatures, that's when you should start actually putting the cover on them.
Perfect. Okay, we've got another text from Charlene in Moose Jaw. I was given an orchid in early January. It's done very well, but the flowers are beginning to fall off. I'm wondering if I should be fertilizing it. If so, what kind of fertilizer should I use and how often?
Yeah, you don't need much fertilizer when they're actually flowering.
Yeah.
The best thing you can do is that when they're still flowering is that make sure that they're not right in direct sunlight, because they'll last longer if they're not in direct sunlight. When they're not blooming, then they can go in direct sunlight. They love it. But when they're blooming, you can just pull them away from the window so they're still in bright light but not in direct sunlight. It'll make them bloom a lot longer. And then what you want to do with orchids, you want to just treat them like you've been treating them. They'll be doing fine. And then you can start fertilizing more once they start losing their flowers. But what you want to do right now is just, and you just want to leave the bract which comes up, which is called the stem where the flowers are on.
Yep.
You want to leave that on until it basically starts turning sort of a brown or black color, okay? Because right now it's probably green. And then what you want to do, then once it turns black, then all the energy has gone back down into the root system. And then there'll be a little sort of a place where a bud would come out about just maybe a half an inch above the soil line. You want to trim it just above that once that stem turns brown. And then after that, it's time to transplant your orchid after they dropped all their blooms.
Yep.
And that stem has turned brown, then it's time to transplant. And then you can use an orchid bark, which is important because a lot of if she just received it, most of the orchids you buy in the store are planted into moss. And that is because for transplanting reasons and mainly for transportation.
Yep.
Keep moisture in them. But really like to be in more of a bark mix. So you get an orchid bark mix and an orchid pot, which is important too, Brittany, is you just can't use an ordinary plastic pot. You have to have the use of a orchid pot. If you ever look in the bottom of your orchid pot, you'll see the holes in the bottom are taller. And so they're letting more air into the roots zone, because naturally they grow in the crotches of trees.
Yeah.
Okay? And where, you know, leaves and pieces of sticks and everything else have accumulated, and that's where the orchid will grow. So you want to create that same type of conditions. And so that's all we use an orchid bark for, which is basically a soilless mix. And it helps keep the bark still absorbs moisture and keeps nutrients for the plant, and it loves that type of situation.
Okay, I had no idea about the special mix you're supposed to use or the special pot, so that
yep.
makes sense why my orchid is literally just two leaves in yep. an empty pot right now. I'm going to have to change it up and hopefully yep. bring it back.
Yeah, some of the orchid pots, actually, if you look at them, they have a whole bunch of holes all around the whole side of the pot.
Wow.
You know, you can get some ceramic ones that are just, you know, they look like someone took a shotgun to them and put holes in them, you know? And so that's the best type of pot for an orchid is that kind of thing. Or the plastic pots, they're actually drainage holes come right up around, you know, up the side.
Yeah.
About basically half an inch up the side of the pot, even those drainage holes. So those are the type of orchid pots that you need when you're transplanting.
Oh, you learn something new every day. All right. This is a text from Joe in Estevan. What are the best indeterminate tomato plants for Saskatchewan?
For Saskatchewan, there's all kinds of ones that you can use. Some people like things like the Big Beef or Better Boys.
Yeah.
People like the Super Fantastic. Those ones are good. If you like, a lot of people like cherry tomatoes, like the Sweet Millions. Most cherry tomatoes are indeterminate. What indeterminate means, indeterminate, people always don't know what the difference is. Indeterminate means that they slowly keep growing longer and longer as the season goes along. They don't stop growing.
Oh, okay.
Whereas determinate means that they're going to be more like a bush. So they don't only grow a certain height and then they stop growing. Okay?
Okay.
Indeterminate means they just keep growing. So a lot of greenhouses use indeterminate and they put wires up and they go right up to the top of the greenhouse because they get more, they keep having more variety. So, you know, indeterminate, you need to definitely, when you plant them out in the garden, you have to put a tomato cage or some kind of a trellis around them.
Okay.
Okay. So they can grow. Determinate are better for if you want to put them into a, let's say a patio pot, like a, you know, to grow them right on your patio.
Okay, perfect. Sounds good. All right, this one is from Rosanda in Estevan. We have lots of weeds in our shelter belt. I was wondering if there's a pre-emergent that we can use that won't hurt the trees and how we apply it. It's a young shelter belt, and we can get through in most parts with the tiller so far.
Yeah, so if it's out in the farm, there's lots of your pre-emergent herbicides that you use right out in the farm that can be used, like things like Linuron and Ronstad and those kind of things. There's a few more that you can use that that the farmers are more familiar with. Just remember, just take a look at the label. A lot of your service centers can help you out with that as well, because if you look at the label, it'll be registered for, you know, for using around trees and that kind of stuff. So you can use those if you want to go. If you don't have that big of a shelter belt and you want to go organic, then you can use things like corn gluten, which is a natural pre-emergent herbicide, and it actually acts as a fertilizer as well. Or you can just mulch around some areas, right? If you can't get in between them anymore, in my acreage, like type of situation, is I just mulched in between and then kept everything clean. And so you can do that too, and just and then that way you help keep moisture in, especially when we had like drought, you know, like I had last year.
Yep.
You know, having some people don't have water there, or if they're on, let's say, an acreage with city water, then it gets expensive for watering a lot.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
Putting that mulch around also helps keep the weed suppression down and also keeps the moisture in.
Okay, perfect. All right, here is another text from Jean from Saskatoon. I have a 10-year-old sour cherry tree that is shading my garden. I want to move it. When and how is the best time to do this?
Yeah, best time to move it is as soon as the frost comes out of the ground.
Okay.
So that's usually around the 15th of April. Anytime around that, you know, 15th to the 30th of April. Some years it's sooner, you know, than later, you know.
Yep.
So as soon as you can get into the ground, and your best to do is to trim that plant back by a third as well. And then when you transplant it, depending how big it is, but take as much root as you can, and then use a transplant fertilizer to help it out. And then that they will have no problems if you move it when the plant is totally dormant. So that means the buds aren't swelling yet on it. So as dormant as possible.
Okay, perfect. All right, here is another text from Dan in Regina. Can you grow carragana bushes from cuttings?
Yes, you can.
Okay.
I have a story. When I was a kid, we used to transplant the rows of plants. And so we used to go to the carragana hedge, and we used to cut a branch off, you know, maybe 2 or 3 feet long, and we used to stick it in at the beginning of the row and then tie the tag to it and tell me what the plants were. Well, that crazy carragana, do you think? It used to always grow on us.
We used to have
a carragana growing in the front of almost every row. So, yes. So size, basically, about the size of your – a good one in size is about the size of your finger. Okay, that's about the size you want to use, size of a pencil to the size of your finger, usually about 6 inches long, and cut the ends on an angle, and use also, if you want better success, use a product called Stim Root, which is a rooting powder, number 3, which is for hardwood cuttings.
Okay, perfect. Yeah, carraganas, we used to, in the old house that we lived in Leoville, there were so many carraganas in the backyard, and my mom tried and tried to get rid of them year after year, but we would always have more coming up, no matter what that poor woman did.
Yeah, you can do that with carraganas, you can do that with poplar, you can do that with lilac. So those three plants you can do very easy, and also willow. You can do it with willow as well. So that works really well with hardwood cuttings.
Perfect. Okay, one last text before we go to the news. This is from Adam. I have a yard with a lot of overgrown pear trees that don't produce fruit and are very old. If I prune them, will they start producing fruit?
They will and they won't. I mean, one thing about stressing a plant, it makes them produce more sometimes. But obviously, if you thin your plant out, you know, so you take, you can thin it back to about a third. So when you thin out the middle, obviously you got less branches that you're going to produce less fruit. Okay.
Yeah.
But and a lot of times you'll get bigger fruit if you just thin it out. And pear trees tend to be a like what I call a rat's nest. They get just messy. So just make sure you don't top it off, because if you top it, it creates a lot of branches at the top, which is a problem for all that fruit later on. So just thin it and always leave a made stem going up and take off where it maybe branches off, and you may have branches off three different directions. Trim them down to one stem. So thin it extensively and it'll be fine.
Perfect. All right. If you've got a question, give us a call. Send us a text, 1-877-332-8255. I am Brittany Caffey here with Rick Van Dyvendyke, and you're listening to Garden Talk on 650 CKOM and 980 CJME. It is a gorgeous day right across the province of Saskatchewan, and we are talking gardens. I'm Brittany Caffey here with Rick Van Dyvendyke, and we've got Garnet on the line. Good morning.
Good
Are you
morning,
there, Garnet?
Oh, good morning. Yes, thank you.
You're welcome. What's your question for Rick?
Well, I have a series of questions. Rick, the first one is regarding our garden soil. It is a very compacted and hard garden. We have been adding different things like peat moss over the years, trying to get it to loosen up. And it is getting better, but it still seems to be a problem. And I did hear you comment, I think, last year about perhaps the garden was getting worked up too fine. So I actually dug it three times last year by hand. and so we're still struggling a bit with that one.
Yeah, multiple rototilling. Rototilling at the beginning of the year is fine, but multiple rototilling, you know, during the year pulverizes the soil. So it breaks down the organic matter in the soil, so it'll just make it harder as well. Also, you never add sand to a clay-based soil, because it'll actually fill up the pores and make concrete. So never use that. So peat moss, I've always had issues with peat moss because, yeah, it is a good organic matter, but it's so fine, it doesn't help break up the clay particles. So what I want to use instead of that, if you have a hard soil, I like using the cedar mulch, because it has lots of bigger sticks and everything else in it. And so I'll rototill it in the beginning of the year. And, also you can use is even a sharp sand, or you can use gypsum. Okay. And gypsum works really good to break up the soil, and it may look a little bit gravelly looking, but I mean, it's amazing what it does to help break up the soil, so those clay particles don't gather together and make it hard. But like I said, I like putting a layer of about an inch of bark mulch over top of the soil and working that into the soil when I rototill it in the spring, and then you'll find you'll be able to just go through and pick weeds. I had a garden one time that I had a blue clay soil underneath, and it was brutal. And I used to put that bark mulch on top, that cedar bark mulch, because the cedar doesn't break down as much. And you'll find that really heavy clay soils are usually high in pH anyways, and the cedar mulch helps bring down the pH and helps the plant. So that's important for your plant, is checking if you're not having good growth also. Just get a pH testing kit that you can get at your garden center, and then you can actually test with distilled water, not tap water, but distilled water. You can actually check your pH and your nutrients of your soil right at your
kitchen. I did that last year, and I think it was about a 6.
It was a 6, so that's low. That's unusual. That's that low. Because normally it's 6. Whereabouts do you live, you said?
Yeah, just in Forest Grove area here, Saskatoon.
Yeah, that's unusual that it's 6. Usually in Forest Grove, in Saskatoon, that area there, because I know our old nursery used to be in Sutherland, right across from Forest Grove. We used to have a pH of about 8.8 to 8.3. And
okay.
So you may want to check what you're using. Make sure you use distilled water when you're checking your soil, your pH, okay? Don't use tap water, because that distorts the test altogether.
Right.
And
okay.
Just maybe do another check to see if it's that. If it's Forest Grove, unless you had a bunch of old evergreens in that area where your garden used to be, I doubt if it's 6. And if it is 6, then you may want to add some lime. You want to go the opposite way. You want to get it up to about 7, okay?
7, okay.
Yeah. Okay.
The other question, and this might all tie in with what you're telling me, is about our potatoes. We've been growing Norland, and because the garden is quite shaded in most part of the garden, so we put the potatoes where the sun shines, and they come up, and they flower, and then they just die off. Just all in that sequence, and there are very, very few potatoes.
And that's unusual, because the only reason why they would maybe die off is you said that if you have most of your yard is shady, you have some big trees around?
Yes, there's a big elm tree right at the corner, and then there's an old apple tree that casts a lot of shade into the garden area as well.
So big elm trees that I would just watch you to make sure that you have enough. The plants are, especially potatoes, because they do eat up a lot of nutrients when they're growing, and also they need lots of moisture. And when you have bigger trees like that, you have a lot of roots that are just maybe starving that plant. So you have to make sure you probe your soil down quite a bit, and then as the season goes along, and make sure you got a soil moisture, not too wet, but just moist, down to the area where your tubers are growing. Okay. And
right.
So checking that, and also, you know, adding your nutrients and adding into that area, just even working in some the alfalfa pellets even into the ground, which adds a lot,
not just
your regular nitrogen, but it adds a lot of all your micronutrients, you know, into the garden, which is probably depleted because of all the big trees around.
Could be. And lastly,
we had
them in planter boxes, and man, the plants themselves grew and grew, but very, very little fruit.
Was this tomato, you said?
Tomatoes, yeah.
Yeah. So what you want to do is if they just kept growing and growing, and watch the type of nutrients you use also. Use an organic or using an actual tomato type of nitrogen. So if you just use a straight nitrogen type of fertilizer, you'll just get growth and growth and growth, and you won't get many, and especially because you're using a soilless mix in that container, most likely, right? You're using a bag soil, correct?
Yes.
And so you want to make sure that you have the right type of nutrients you're using. So using organic vegetable fertilizer. And then also, if they keep growing and growing, it's probably basically an we talked about it earlier in the show, an indeterminate type of plant. So once they keep wanting to grow, just once they get to a certain height, then you can nip the top, and it'll stop them from growing, and then they'll produce more fruit for you as well. Or otherwise, make sure you pick a bush type of tomato for a planter to do a lot better as well.
Well, thank you for your help this morning, Rick. I really liked your show.
Okay, thank
you. Awesome. Thanks so much, Garnet. Yep. All right, now we've got Grant in Regina. Good morning, Grant.
Good morning. How are you guys?
Good, thanks. Very What's good. Your question?
I have a couple of different unrelated questions. First one is I have a Brugsmania that's about 2-3 years old. I've been bringing it into my house over the winter and keeping it alive. I just couldn't bear to let it go after, you know, the beauty of it in the first year.
Yep.
So my question is watering it or treating it over the winter. Am I best to treat it like, you know, leave it dormant still, or could I or should I be giving it some fertilizer maybe as we approach spring?
Yeah, fertilizing you can start now. The daylight hours are getting longer.
Yep.
You can start fertilizing it, absolutely. You may want to think about transplanting it if you want to transplant it into just a one size larger pot. Okay. This is a good time to do it if you want to do that.
Yeah.
But otherwise, keeping it dormant, giving it a rest is a good idea every year.
Yeah. Okay.
And then, but then once we start getting close into March, then you can start fertilizing it again and putting it into more brighter light if you want, and getting it to start flowering in the house for you if you want again.
Okay. Would a fertilizing, a flowering fertilizer, or what would be best for fertilizer?
Yeah, you don't really need a high nitrogen, because some of those plants, they're more like a vine type of plant, right? So it'll want to tend to, if you put a high nitrogen on it, it's going to want to take off on you, want to bolt. You don't want to do that. You just want to be able to sustain the plant so that it starts looking healthy and starts getting bushier, so that when you put it outside, it'll just take off and grow up your trellis, right?
Okay.
So we want to just use a well-balanced fertilizer. Like I said, even if you use a fertilizer that's more, has all the micronutrients in it, that's what they'll tend to build up as energy. I wouldn't just use just 20-20-20, because then you're just talking about nitrogen, phosphorus, potassium, right?
Right, you bet.
Fertilizer, look for fertilizer that has a boron, zinc, magnesium.
Okay.
Calcium.
Kind of ties into my next question about it.
Yep.
It is approximately 4 feet tall, and of course, with it being that tall, all of the leaves are pretty much all at the top. And I'm wondering, if I was to make small cuts where the leaves had been previously, or is there any way to prompt it to bring leaves back lower on those branches?
It's 4 feet tall?
Yeah.
Basically, prune it back a third.
Okay, and that will then prompt us to send out?
Yep.
Okay.
And also make sure that wherever you put it, that you have light that gets straight to the bottom of the plant.
Okay.
A lot of times they're going to reach up the trellis and the bottom gets all shaded, right?
Yeah.
So if you can put it in a place where it'll get light on the whole plant, even at the bottom, then you'll keep those leaves at the bottom of the plant.
Good to know. Excellent. Okay, the other question is, I have a plum tree as well. It's, I think, about 7 years old. And last year I decided to, you know, rather than keeping it, you know, shorter, easier to, you know, pick from, et cetera, I thought, why not let it grow taller based on a picture that I'd seen of a gorgeous plum tree in Germany, and thought, you know, why not do that? So I'm wondering, is there an advantage or disadvantage to keeping it, you know, shorter versus taller and that type of thing?
Shorter just means that it's easier to pick the fruit.
Okay.
like you said. But what you can do is thin the plant out. So as it grows taller, like you'll know it wants to have a main stem and then it forks off, right?
Right, yeah.
So the ones that fork off, then you can trim some of those so that you're still letting light down into the rest of the plant, okay?
Okay.
So don't let it get really bushy at the top. Keep it thin, but just let the plant grow as tall as it naturally wants to, because it'll normally stop anywhere from the, in a plum tree, from the 12 to 14 foot height is where it usually will stop.
Okay.
So just keep it trimmed out and keep it thinned out. If you do want to keep it short, and it's called pollarding or topping the tree, you just need to go in the summertime again and take those new little branches and then thin them down to one and leave one branch up again during the summertime.
Okay.
That's what they do in the orchards, right? They do cut them back, but then they do thin them during the year. They just don't prune them once a year or once every 2 years or whatever. They have arborists that are going in through continually pruning the plants.
Okay. And the last question for that guy then is, with the lack of rainfall and moisture that we've had in recent years, would watering something like that once a week be adequate, or how frequently should a person be putting the hose on that thing?
Basically equivalent to 1 inch of water per week.
Okay, per week. Okay. All right. Sounds good. Thank you so much for the help.
Okay.
Thanks so much, Grant. You too. All right. We are going to take a quick break and we'll be back to answer a few more questions. I'm Brittany Caffey here with Rick Van Dyvendyke. You are listening to Garden Talk on 650 CKOM and 980 CJME. Caffey. I'm here with Rick Van Dyvendyke, and we are joined by Brad out in Plenty. Good morning, Brad.
Hi, how are you today?
Good, thanks.
Good morning.
Hi, Rick. Hey, I have a couple of questions on some Colorado spruce trees I have out on my farm.
Yep.
I have some that are about 2 years old. They're about maybe 2 feet, 2.5 feet tall, and right now I have some of them completely covered with snow, and I'm just wondering if that is okay.
Perfect. That's better than them sticking out of the snow a little bit.
Okay. Okay, there is some where the tops are sticking out a little bit.
Yep. And so that sticking out, if you get these type of warm temperatures, that's when you'll see them turning brown or purple later on in the summertime, okay?
Okay.
And so the covered up is way better. Absolutely.
Okay. And another question. I have some spruce trees, too. They're about, 8 to 10 feet tall, and I'm thinking of relocating them. To the other side of the yard, some of them?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
When's a good time to do that?
Before candle break. So before the new buds come. So as early as you can, when the frost's out of the ground.
Yeah.
As soon as you can do them, the better. Okay? Otherwise, you can move them again, especially when you move with a machine. You can move them again in basically by the end of August and through September.
Okay. And is there any special tips for, like, watering once I relocate them or staking them down or...
Keep them moist, and if they're taller, that taller, then with the winds we've been having, staking them is important. And depending on what you're using to transplant them with, right? Are you using a tree spade, or what are you using to move them?
Yeah, tree spade.
Yeah. So just keeping the moisture to them, and that's huge. I move some very large trees, and then but I'd be able to keep the water on them, and especially if you got a sandier soil, then just make sure if you're clay, then obviously it'll retain the moisture a bit better. So you don't have to water them quite as much, but otherwise keeping them moist, and even if it's really hot and dry, even spraying the tops with water helps quite a bit too every once in a while in the really hot spells. But using a transplant fertilizer also make a liquid and pour it around where the holes are, you know, where the tree spade goes down into the ground, where you put the new plant in, pour some liquid transplant fertilizer into those areas too. That'll help them recover quicker.
Okay. One other question about that. Does it matter the direction that you put the tree in again? Like if you pull the tree out, should the north side go back in on the north side, facing the north side?
No. I've never had an issue with that. The only time it's an issue is you're pulling it out of the bush, okay, where they've been shaded by the other trees, like a lot. But if they were in a row already, it's not really that big of an issue.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Awesome. Thanks so much, Brad. All right. We have got a text on the text line from Marlene in Saskatoon. I planted my celery seed and was wondering when I can start putting a fan on my seedlings to strengthen the stems. And would that apply to all of my seedlings?
Absolutely. All your seedlings, as soon as they pop out of the soil, because you're really trying to stop a lot of fungal from happening and called damping off where they rot off at the soil surface as well.
Yep.
So as soon as you start seeing the soil moving and little leaves sticking out is when you want to have a fan just on very, very lightly. If it's a bigger fan you have, put it on the other side of the room and just let it blow so you just see those leaves just moving and just swaying a little bit, and that's all they need, and that's perfect.
Yep, just a gentle breeze like they're
just
outside.
Just a gentle breeze.
Yep. Perfect.
We don't want to have a hurricane wind on them. Then they'll be leaning over to the side.
Yep, perfect. All right, one last text. This is from Paulette from Saskatoon. Good morning. I have a problem with my potatoes. They look fine on the outside, but some of them have brown spots inside. What causes this? If I use them for seed this year, will the new potatoes have the same problem?
They could have. It could be a fungal, or it could be an insect. That it was a long line that goes all the way through. It might have been a boring insect that went into the tuber.
Yeah.
And otherwise, it could be. So make sure that you plant your new potatoes in a different location, not in the same location. Usually, that'll solve the problem. Okay, that's very important. And using potatoes from last year, if they do have any issues, don't use them. So get a new certified seed potato that's clean. And then you won't have the problems. But if you use old seed potatoes of any problems, it just brings it back to your whole garden patch again. So you want to clean it up, plant it in a different location, and use new seed potatoes.
Perfect. All right. Well, Rick, it's been a pleasure. Thanks so much.
Thanks.
Have a great rest of your Sunday.
You too.
Awesome. Thanks so much, everybody, for listening. I'm Brittany Caffey here with Rick Van Dyvendyke, and you are listening to Garden Talk on 650 CKOM and 980 CJME.